please consider calling into the show today. We have a number of hot topics, and your voice needs to be heard. Thoughts, Love, and Reflections is your opportunity to make sure your opinion is heard over the noise of the media. James T. Deshaies is committed to bringing the voice of the people to the world stage. He'll select topics, but your voice will be the focus. So take time to spend with him and inform the world of your views. We can no longer sit back and let others tell us what to think. The cost of being a silent majority is too great, and too many lives are being destroyed. The leaders around the world need to be put on notice that their jobs and careers depend on how well they listen. Call in on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 657-383-0309, or Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 347-855-8867, or Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 657-383-0309. Why don't you add Thoughts, Love, and Reflections to your weekly schedule? If you have story ideas or topics of discussion, contact James Deshaies at 407-394-9819 or email djames82@aol.com.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1, and it's 24/7, the world's best radio station.
Welcome, everyone. This is your host, James T. Deshaies of Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. You know, as always, I'm happy to be here with you, and I look forward to sharing a conversation. And today is no different. We're going to spend some time talking about a historical travesty that is taking place in our country. And I'm sure not many of you may be aware of it unless you have some direct relationship with someone who has been through the criminal system. Right now, in many states across the country, about 10 states, if not more, have a situation where felons, once they get out and have done their time, are still not allowed to vote. Fought one time for what we call no taxation without representation. But yet we have a system in our criminal justice system that once a person has done his time and has been released, there are 10 or more states that still refuse to give him back his right to vote. And so we just want to talk about some of the issues that inhibit African Americans the most, because a majority, or a close majority, of the ones that are impacted are African Americans who lose their right to vote because they have been incarcerated. And for me, the two have nothing to do with each other. I fully understand that if you go to jail, and for the length of time that you are in jail, I can understand a state saying, well, we're not going to incur the cost necessary to provide you an opportunity to vote. You give up that opportunity to vote as long as you're incarcerated. But once you are no longer incarcerated, once you have paid your debt to society, you should be given the opportunity to vote. You should not be taxed on your job. You should not be taxed in the stores or anywhere else if you cannot vote for your representation. And here in Florida and in many other states, they deny people the right to get their votes, their voter status back, once they have committed a felony. And in some states, you can commit a crime such as stealing or shoplifting and have your voters' rights be removed. So this is something serious, because in the state of Florida, there are nearly 100,000 individuals who do not have the right to vote as a result of being a felon. And if you submit a application to have your voters' rights restored, it may or may not be given back to you. So you have to wait until a group of individuals decide that you've earned the right for your vote to be reinstated. So we just want to talk about today about how that impacts African Americans the most, because we already know that African Americans are disproportionately arrested mostly. We know that African Americans disproportionate are convicted and given long prison sentences. And so these individuals who are given these long prison sentences or even short prison sentences once they commit a felony are then not allowed to vote. And because the majority of African Americans vote Democratic, there is nothing encouraging Republican governors or Republican state attorneys to allow them the opportunity to vote, because they know that most of these votes would be against them. So we just want to talk today about how in the world do the two have anything to do with each other. Again, commit a crime, you should be sentenced based on whatever the law is, but once you have served your time, all of your rights should be reinstated unless there's a compelling reason not to. I understand that if you have an individual who shot somebody or used a weapon inappropriately, then maybe you don't want to give him the right to own a weapon back. But voting, there is no downside to voting while you would keep that away from anybody. So I'm not sure I understand why, other than that it wouldn't be in the best interest of the Republican Party to allow African Americans or Hispanics the right to vote, because it's more likely that they would vote Democratic. So we don't go to people on the phone lines. We're just going to spend some little time talking about why in the world would this type of law, and the law goes all the way back to when slavery was ended. And even beyond that, it was suggested that this has been a law used even in Europe prior to America being created. Audrey, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am just fine. Thank you very much. And thank you for bringing this topic up, because, as a matter of fact, I was aware of someone who had something stolen on the weekend. Excuse me. And because of the value of it, if indeed charges were pressed, it would generate a felony. And so you're at a crossroad. My friend is questioning whether indeed she should move forward with, pressing charges. It's a young male, black, I think he's probably about 18, maybe 20 at the most, I'm sure, just made a bad decision. But now you have to just think about, the impact of that person's life will forever be changed because of the fact, like you said, if indeed a person is identified as a felon here, certain rights are, no longer available to you. And then in addition to that, some jobs will not allow you to, have a felony on your record and stuff. And some companies view it as a period of time and then they'll still consider it, but some just depend on what it is. If it has something to do with the government or CIA, I don't think they expunge it or whatever. So it is an issue in which we have to make sure that young people are aware of how important their choices are and the consequences that goes along with it. They don't understand the full magnitude of it. Then, some of them just think it's a joke or just trying to get some extra money here. But that little $20 or whatever you may take it to the pawn shop to get, it's not worth the impact of your life being turned inside out.
And you're so right. And it's amazing, when I first heard about it, you know, some laws just don't make good sense to me. And it just doesn't, I don't even see the relationship between a person's right to vote and a person's right to, and being incarcerated. Of course, I can see you making an argument that you, as a state, you should not incur a cost related to bringing the voting booth to them, and so therefore, while they're incarcerated, they cannot vote. To suggest once you release them that they should not have their voting rights restored, it just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. We have Kathy on the phone, and Kathy, while I was going over this, I think California is one of the few states that not only they make provisions for those that are incarcerated to vote. Had you heard that?
Yes. Actually, my husband, when he first got out, he was not able to vote. But after he got off of parole and went through some classes, now he is able to vote. So they do have programs in California where you can regain your, what would it be called, your voter rights, where you can go out and vote.
Well, it's amazing. You know, California has always been seen as a very liberal state. And once again, it says in my reading that in 2016, California passed legislation allowing those who are in county jail to vote while incarcerated. So as long as they're not in federal prison, they can't vote. But if they're in the county jail, they can vote. And I just see that, you know, that's such a major part of our Constitution. You know, we fought England because of that. You know, when we talk about the Tea Party, or the Boston Tea Party, is, I hope that is, I remember that correctly, it said that we fought because we didn't believe in taxation without representation. England wanted to tax America on all the goods that were bought and sold in America without them having any representation. And certainly, if you are incarcerated or you want you are locked up and when you get out of jail, you would want to vote for someone who had some type of commitment to programs that would allow you to get back on your feet. But because so many African Americans are probably more likely to be Democrats, these rules stay in place. In the state of Florida, there are over 100,000 individuals who've been released who are not being allowed to vote in this upcoming election. And when they put in a petition to get their voters' rights back, they may be or may not be denied because it's not based on just the fact that you're out. And that just seems to be so reprehensible, don't you think, Audrey?
Yes, it does. It doesn't follow with being forgiven, for sure. It just seemed like if you made a bad choice and you made a mistake and, again, you've, paid the price or what was aligned as the price for that crime, then, of course, now the person should have another opportunity. But that's just still holding that one thing, that path over that person. And, again, it limits in so many ways, and we have to do something about it. But I think the first part of it is to, again, to communicate and really inform our young people and let them know what's involved and what impact it could be on their future.
Well, the states that hold people's voters' rights from them are Alabama, Arizona, Florida, Iowa, Kentucky, Mississippi, Nevada, Virginia, and Wyoming. You have to petition the governor in those states to give you your voters' rights back. The other states states that give you your right to vote back as soon as you are released are the District of Columbia, Hawaii, Illinois, Indiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Montana, New Hampshire, North Dakota, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. So I'm not sure I understand why we would have these states that want to make it so difficult for a person to get their voters' rights back, other than wanting to disenfranchise those people who have had a issue with the law. And that doesn't seem that one has anything to do with the other. If you break into somebody's house or steal somebody's car, that's not a reason to take your voters' rights.
Well, look at the states you mentioned. Those are all southern states. And so a lot of times the southern states are known for holding on to what they believe even before, the Confederate states or whatever the case may be. So you see the more progressive states, again, having it such that if you have a felony, it's not required that you, have to request the governor reinstate you. It's just automatically. So sometimes you have these southern states aligned, and this is an example of just that.
Kathy, do you believe that the ability to reinstate a person's vote, ability to vote, helps to get them reacclimated to society so that they can feel like they are a major part of society and helping them with not going back into the system?
No, I really don't think so, no. Because whatever they're going to do regardless if they are able to vote or if they're not able to vote. Half of the people that have been incarcerated and have come out do not even believe in the voting system. They think that it's rigged, because most of the time when I talk to Michael, he thinks that it's already rigged, and he brings up different points about, the election now and how they already have everything set up. So most of those people do not even care about the voting process. I'm laughing because I'm thinking about the conversations that him and I have and how I try to convince him that, it's not rigged. It is, every vote does count, but he does not believe that at all. So I don't think that will play a major part, being able to give those that who have been incarcerated and are out, I don't think it will really matter.
Well, we want to so badly to help people to fully be acclimated and adjusted back into society, giving them all the rights that they deserve. And certainly I understand why, again, someone who has abused his right to have a weapon would not be given the right to have a weapon back, just like you wouldn't necessarily give a person the right to drive if they've had a vehicular homicide. And so if they've shown that they just can't be trusted with driving a car, I understand why you may hold their rights to drive a car, or you think you can't trust them to make the right decisions with a firearm that you might not want them to own or have a possession of a firearm. But there doesn't seem to be any downside whatsoever to allowing people to have the right to vote. And I know, just like you say, there are a lot of people out there who believe their vote does not count, that their vote, they don't want to participate in the system because they don't believe it's properly or works in their best interest. But that's something we have to overcome, and we certainly can't overcome it if we don't allow them to have their voting rights back. And so I think the least that we can do as a democratic society is allow people a easy road to reinstating their rights to vote, because I believe voting is a is a major part of what being American is all about, and as well as being on a jury. Now, I guess that's another discussion if you want to allow convicted felons to play a role on the jury, or could they be expected to do a honest job on the jury if, in fact, they don't believe in the system itself?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I've been on the jury at least four times. The first time, I was not truthful with how I actually felt about the case. So I don't think it's a good idea to have people that have been convicted of certain crimes to be able, I mean, to be on a jury stand. I mean, because I'm going to say I wasn't in my right mind during that time. I really wasn't. And I'm not going to lie, I wasn't. And when I got up there, I voted against the person that was on trial. And I should not have. You know, all the evidence, man, that's not funny. All the evidence led towards him being innocent, and I voted against it. And that was not right. But that's when I was in my 20s. That was over 20-some years ago. But I'm just saying that to say that it's people that have been in prison and get out, and they get the jury service slip, and they go, how do we know? And how do we know anybody, really? How do we know if anybody is really telling the truth, if anybody is really being truthful to themselves the way that they vote, you know, guilty or not guilty? How do we don't know what a person is thinking, or, you know, if they've been in some kind of incident that is close to this that will make them vote against or for. You know, we don't know. But saying that to say that if you have a convicted drug dealer, I'm just going to use drug dealer, to go and be on the jury, and then the case that, and even though sometimes they bring this stuff up, if they don't have evidence that this person was convicted of this crime before, there's no way for them to tell, because sometimes those records are sealed anyway. So if they stand up there and say, no, I've never been convicted of any crime, you can't go back and look to tell that they were convicted of that crime, but yet still they know that this person is guilty and all the evidence points towards this person, and they say not guilty. I mean, that's really an up-in-the-air question. So I don't know, but my personal feelings, I would say no on that one.
Well, you know, and I can understand that. There's some things that make sense to me. And we're today, we just had a new caller come on. Today we're talking about whether or not convicted felons should have all their rights restored to them. And we, you know, the voting, I think, is the most important. And there is no downside to that. But should they be allowed to be on juries? Should they be allowed to carry, to have the right to own a weapon? I just think that owning a weapon requires someone that has the ability to control themselves and control their actions. And I do understand what you're saying, Kathy, in regards to whether or not someone who has been convicted of a felony truly can render a decision about another inmate, because a lot of times they have these thoughts about people who commit crimes and whether or not they should be judged by our system. So 7018, what are your thoughts about individuals who get out of jail, and should all of their rights be restored, or should we keep some of their rights back depending on what kind of crime they have committed?
I personally think, this is Kennedy calling from Tennessee, I personally think that some of the rights should be kept back You know, when we violate society rules, then there should be a price to be paid for that. And so many times we are so willing to, you know, overlook some of the things that happen. And yes, we should take them case by case and look at those circumstances and see where we should hold back some rights of some felons. Now, I do not believe that a violent felony, that person should be allowed to carry a weapon such as a firearm, because we know that they have problems controlling their behavior to that point. And who's to say it wouldn't happen again? Now, I know that those people going out there and they're buying illegal weapons. Yes, they are buying weapons off the street. But we should not give them the right to carry those weapons. Anyways, voting rights, that is something I am strongly debating within myself, because I know it has affected more so the African-American population than anything else. And if we want people to determine their future in terms of the government officials that they're going to have officiating over them, then we have to give them back the rights to vote. And so I am very lenient on that side, that they should, that their voting rights should be restored to some degree, yes. So I said to
you, what are your thoughts about them being on juries? Do you think that those who have committed crimes and committed felonies should have the right to sit on a jury and possibly have the ability to put someone in jail or not put them in jail based on the history that they have?
No. On the jury, no. James, you and I have had so many experiences. Can you imagine the chaotic situation we would have if you you know, they are very sympathetic towards a lot of criminals, are sympathetic towards criminals. You know that. And you know that there's some people are going to say, it's the police fault. It's this person's fault. No. I don't think they should sit on no jury at all.
That's well, with Kennedy, on that one, I agree with you. I don't know if we can trust, because their their belief system and their value system is so so changed.
Twisted.
And so altered by being in jail.
Yes. Right. And that's what I'm saying. Their value system is so twisted that we cannot trust that kind of, we cannot leave our system up, our justice system, in the hands of people who are so deranged in their thinking process.
All right, I got another caller. Kennedy, stay on the line and we'll come back. 2243, we're talking about, should those who've committed felonies, who've served their time, should they be allowed to have all their rights reinstated once they leave and have given spent their time in jail and they're released? Should they have all their rights restored, or should we hold back some of their rights depending on what type of felony they committed? 2243,
hello.
Are you there? Yes.
Hello.
I'm here. I hear you.
I do agree that they should be able to vote if they're going to be back in the society and able to work and live under the laws. They should be able to work be able to vote. As far as voting in the jury and the justice system, I don't think that they should, because not all of them is right. So that may, it's a two-way for me.
Well, if we are saying, but now remember, we're saying to people, you have served your time, you have paid your debt to society, but as a system, we're still going to deny you some of the things. So that's kind of counterpart to saying that you could, you've satisfied your debt. Don't you think if you're going to withhold some rights from them after they've served their 5 years or their 10 years or their 20 years, then it seems that they have to pay their debt to society.
Yeah, they have paid their debt to society, but I mean, when it comes to legal systems being in jail and you know, but listening to case-by-case scenarios, you know, maybe if they were to reinstate as far as being on the jury, you know, some cases they can't be a part of because you can't be a former drug dealer and now you're sitting on a case prosecuting somebody who's selling drugs. Like, you know, so that's a up and up one for me as far as voting for what's going to happen in the country. You know, we need your vote for that.
Well, you know, I was just being a devil's advocate. You're right. I don't want a known drug dealer to be sitting on a kingpin trial and his vote can keep that person from being going to jail because, you know, we have a system that one vote is enough to keep you from being convicted. But I do believe that once you serve your time, you should have the right to vote. And I think most of the states that are keeping people from voting are doing it because they know that most convicted felons and certainly those of color would more likely be Democrat, especially if we're dealing with a Republican governor. Regina, you have a Republican governor. What are your thoughts about them holding back the rights of convicted felons? Holding the right to vote hostage.
To do what now?
Holding their right to vote hostage once they're being released.
Our rights are not held hostage here in South Carolina. Once a convicted felon has gotten out of jail and has served his time, once he has paid all of his restitution and he has he owes no more money, he is very eligible to vote. As a matter of fact, as little as it is known, the folk who are sitting here in our city and county jail can vote because they have not been convicted of a crime. They are in a holding pattern, and they are innocent until proven guilty. So we don't have that problem in South Carolina.
Okay. Now, I do see you are on the list that says that they are giving their rights back automatically once all restitutions are made and after parole. But why is it that they still do it even with that? I mean, what if I never have the ability to pay off all my restitution? Why should you hold me hostage once I've done all my time?
That means that you have not repaid to take care of the crime that you committed. And until you have repaid that, because the crime that you committed was against someone that you took away their constitutional rights, and until you have repaid them, then no, you cannot and should not be able to vote. And that's one of the things that I go out and not research, but make sure my boys in the hood know about. Yes, you can vote. As a matter of fact, I recently had a gentleman whose restitution and time was going to be paid up right before the election. And as long as that was the case, then he, too, was eligible to vote.
Well, let me ask you about then their right to be on juries and their right to own firearms. What are your thoughts in terms of that? Should those rights be restored?
If they were in jail due to a violent crime, no, they should not be able to own a firearm. And as far as them being, I believe that they should be called to jury, but I believe that they should be vetted. And this, it should be determined whether or not their past violations would be in conflict of whatever trial they would be seated for, or they will be called to see if they can be seated.
All right. Kennedy, let me ask you this question. You and I both worked in jails, and we know the mindset of criminals, and a lot of them believe that people should not snitch on one another. So is that one of the reasons why you believe they shouldn't be allowed to be on jury duty because of their commitment to the underground, so to speak, that they're more committed to their violent or their criminal behavior or criminals, their commitment to the criminal element versus to be rehabilitated citizens?
Well, James, let's get this. Let me get it clear. I am not saying, I don't think it's the fact about snitching on each other. It's a pattern of thinking that they have. Criminals have a way of thinking that most of us do not have. Because if we had that same kind of thinking, all the jails would be overflowing with a whole lot of people. So I can't see a criminal deciding if another criminal is guilty. But here's what I want to say to you. Because they have served their time, that doesn't mean that they have changed their mind. They have served their time. They have paid the debt to society. But that doesn't mean that they have changed their mind. That doesn't mean their mind has been reformed. Okay? And the thing about it is that the mind has to be transformed, James, and if the mind is not transformed, we will continue to have the problems from there. You have seen so many people go in and come out of jail, back and forth, because their mind has not been transformed. And so when you don't have a transformed mind, what do you think is going to happen? Chaos is going to breed chaos. People who are criminals and their mind hasn't been transformed, they're going to support other criminals. And if we were to do that, we would create a recipe for disaster in our society. And I said to you again, yes, I would give them some privileges of voting, but that's as far as where it goes. They're not going to sit in juries, and they're not going to be able to carry a firearm.
All right, Kathy, but I know that you do believe in rehabilitation, don't you? And should that be a part of what our society should be willing to pay for, that we should spend money on rehabilitating those who find themselves getting in trouble?
Well, we spend our money on everything else, so I don't see why not. I think that would be a great idea to have some kind of system set up so that when they do get out, they are sent to some kind of program to talk to them about life skills and what they're going to need and how they're going to have to behave since they have been given their freedom a second, third, maybe fourth time. And I just wanted to add to what the last caller was talking about the mindset, you know, of people. And sometimes you can have a mindset where you think of something bad that you want to do, but that doesn't mean that you have to react on everything that you think about, like us, every day. Sometimes we get in situations where in our minds we want to say something or we want to do something to somebody, but we don't always act on those thoughts.
And, you know, it's important to understand that, you know, if we have a very caring heart and if we're believers, we have to believe that in second chances. And if we don't want to give people a second opportunity to redeem themselves, then we're almost submitting them to a life of crime. 2243, what are your thoughts about should we be using tax dollars to help rehabilitate criminal behavior?
Well, should we use tax dollars for all kind of other nonsense? I don't see why we shouldn't. If it's going to help to get them back to the condition that the state requires you to be in. So, I mean, if they using tax dollars to go sail off to the next country, why can't we have some kind of program that would help them and it could give them a second chance? And then if you violate that second chance, then you had your opportunity. Because, again, as believers, we do believe in, you know, starting over again. So, I mean, I don't, that could be something that could be put out there.
James, who determines when a person has been rehabilitated? Who determines when a person has been rehabilitated, James?
Well, Kennedy, you know, we have life skill classes and all kind of other things. We at the 33rd where we work, they had Mason classes or different classes that they tried to get them in. Don't we need to have even more advanced classes to help these guys get to the point where they're educated?
Yeah, but my question to you is, who determined when these people have been rehabilitated? Because they know how to play the game too. And you understand that. It's a mindset. They know how to say and do the things that will make you think that they have changed. So what I'm saying to you is rehabilitation is not only a person telling you that they have changed, but we have to give them some time. It's a time frame. Has to be taken into consideration. Is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Is it 5 years? Then if a person is really playing a game, they can't last that long playing the game. But if you give them 5 years and you see that they have really changed, then you can say some rehabilitation has taken place. So what I'm saying, who's going to determine that?
Well, I think we just have to give them benefit of the doubt. I don't know if there's any way you can know for sure. Certainly, we've let people out on parole, and they went out and they did the same horrendous thing that they did to go to jail. So I don't know if there's any way to know for sure if a person's heart has changed, because you're right. They'll say the right thing and stay out of trouble because they know that eventually they'll be let out of jail. But at some point, we just have to give them a shot because we can't know what's in their mind.
Well,
Regina, let me ask Regina. Regina, you support the right of them being able to vote again. But let me ask you, are we putting too many financial burdens on those who've gone to jail so often that they're unable to find the money needed to pay all the debt they have to the courts and to restitution?
Now, that's a very, very interesting question because we've been working with some of the builders and contractors who are coming into our city. And one of the things we ask them to do is to, before a contract is awarded to these folks, we're asking that they make a commitment to come into the communities and hire some of the people, you know, the people who are unemployed or underemployed. Well, a problem that we have run into is that so many of them have convictions, and they need to be involved in the expungement process. Well, I thought it was an easy, it was an easy process until I found out that there's a cost to $200, $300, depending on the amount of charges that need to be expunged. That in itself is holding back our underemployed and unemployed, people who have made errors, made mistakes, and they need to get out there and work. When they don't have the money to pay back what they owe, it drives them back into that criminal element to get the money that they need to survive, let alone to pay an expungement process. So I think that there are a lot of undue charges being placed upon people who we want to be rehabilitated. And it's really a catch-22 situation.
Well, I know for a fact that there are people who go get a job who have had their license revoked because drug dealers here in the state of Florida, if you get a drug charge, you can have your license revoked. And then they find themselves in a situation where they're forced to drive without a driver's license because they have to get to their job in a timely fashion. So sometimes we're creating obstacles that these people can't overcome, or that we get them right back in jail because we're not paying attention to some of the requirements that they may have about getting these particular jobs. 3766, 3766, give us your name and where you're calling from. And let me ask you, what do you feel about, Regina, is that your number?
You know I was going to start talking again.
Well, I saw another number. It must have dropped off. But, Kennedy, let me ask, what are your thoughts about the fact that we take people's driver's license from them for these drug convictions, and then they can't get to work, and then they're driving on suspended driver's license?
James, there ought to be some sort of consequences for violating the rules of society. Okay, I'm in favor of a person who is caught in drug trafficking, license being suspended, revoked, or whatever it may be. What the problem I had with, and I still have the problem with this, is a person who, and I know this is not what we're talking about, but a person who has child support issues, that they were suspending their license. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense at all. How are these people going to work to take care of their kids? So we can find a better way to do that. But once you've been charged with drugs, yes, your license should be suspended because you're trafficking. And operating a vehicle legally makes it a lot easier for you to traffic in drugs.
You have paid your debt to society, why shouldn't you be given your driver's license back? I understand that you shouldn't have a driver's license while you're in jail, but when you paid your debt to society, why are you going to predetermine that I'm going to do the same crime again and keep my ability to make a living away from me?
Well, if you've been sentenced for 9 months, your driver's license has been suspended for a year, so obviously you shouldn't get it back until that year has passed. So you serve your time, okay, you still got 3 more months before you can get your driver's license back. That's okay.
Well, in some cases, they're suspended for longer than that, and the fees, and again, the fees necessary to get your license back are so high that they can't get their license back because they don't have a job. And so we have to understand we can't put obstacles in people's way of them getting a job if that's what it's going to take for them to be a positive force in our society.
James, you have to abide by society rules or else you'll be locked up. They know that. All right? Why are you trying to give them an easy pass?
Well, I'm just saying, if you're going to give me 3 years for something that I did, then the 3 years should be my punishment, not additional punishment outside of jail.
Well, hey, that is just part of the system. You know, it's a ripple effect. When you do something, it triggers other things into place. And so you can't just – it's just like you go out there and you buy something and you decide that you're not going to pay any folks. Then your credit gets messed up. After your credit gets messed up, then you can't buy a car because nobody's going to sell you a car unless they're going to give you one at pay here, buy here, pay here. So it's just a ripple effect. James, is that, and people have to realize there's a consequence to a behavior. You can choose your action, but you can't choose the consequences. And so it so happens that we're trying to give people an easy pass. The consequences are not severe enough to some of the behaviors. I said to some, not all, to some of the behaviors.
All right, 2243. How do you feel about the fact that society is putting obstacles in the way of some people who have committed felonies who are out now trying to make a living, and we are creating an environment where they cannot make a living honestly? Shouldn't we be removing obstacles instead of putting obstacles in their way?
Yes, because I think that some of the things that they put out there, okay, for instance, you take your license, you know, well, how am I supposed to work? How do I do these things? How can I get a decent job? Maybe I want to become a technician, but I can't drive a vehicle because you've taken my license. So I am trying to reform, but I can't because of all the stipulations that you have for me to reform. So some of the stuff should let us and the people could reform, and they won't have to continue to resort to violence and crimes, and because now you've allowed me to be able to work here, work there. So, yes, there should be something set in place or removed so that they can get back into the society. But we're holding them back from, you know, by saying, no, you can't do this, no, you can't do that.
And that's what I'm concerned about, is that some of these guys are going to go to work, going to go drive to their jobs, and then going to get stopped, and then they're going to be put back in jail because their license has been suspended. And so they're not doing the crimes that they may have gotten in trouble initially, but they do have to get back and forth to work so they can continue to feed their families. Regina, your thoughts?
Well, I'm in agreement with you because I'm carefully watching a situation now where a person just got out of federal prison, and he has an ankle, I was told to call a GPS system or something, an ankle monitoring system on him. Well, my question was, who's going to take him to get a job? How does he get a job? If these folks do not have family who is going to contribute to their well-being until they can get on their feet, then they're going to be right back into that bad situation that got them into the criminal justice system. Family member gave him a phone. He had to be taught how to use the phone. He had to be taught how to use a microwave. And so my question now, again, is who's going to take him around to get a job because he can't just live for free. And eventually he's going to have to pay for that cell phone he has. So we need to do some things, and I know there are some places that have programs. I'm not aware of what the programs are, but I'm very interested in finding out about them.
All right, Kathy, we're going to allow you to have the last word because you have some experience with people who have made the adjustment. What are your thoughts about our commitment to people who've made mistakes and their ability to become positive forces in our community?
I do believe that they should be given a second chance. That's why it's called Second Chance. And there are programs I know of in California where they help you. They give you tokens to ride the bus. They have a place where you go and create a resume. And there are jobs that you can look online that do hire felons. So there is programs and resources out there for those type of people. But I do believe that they need a second chance because, hey, we've all had second chances and we just didn't get caught with whatever it was that we were doing. But we have had second, third, and fourth chances where we've done things but just never got caught doing it. So we didn't have to serve any time. We didn't have to go before anyone and be placed in a system where our life was taken away from us and then had to reestablish ourselves all over again. So I believe that there needs to be a form put together in other states where when a person does get out of jail, there are places that he can be sent to, she can be sent to reform themselves. That's if they want it, because some people don't want the help. And then the family members can help them as well.
All right. I want to thank all of you for your support. Again, this hour always goes by fast when we have plenty of people out there to have their opinions heard. And we want people to recognize and know that these people are convicted felons, are part of a family, and their family wants them to be successful. And we have to play a part and a positive part in them being able to rehabilitate themselves and give them an opportunity to be a positive force in our society. I want you to visit my website, www.jamestdeshay.com. That's www.jamestdeshay.com. And I want you to look into purchasing my book on lulu.com. That's lulu.com as well. Let me know what you think about it. I want you to be committed to making thoughts, love, and reflection a part of your everyday schedule. We are on from Sunday to Friday at 6 p.m. every day and on Saturdays at 8 p.m. I look forward to having you on my show. Take care, and I'll see you tomorrow at 6 p.m. on Thoughts, Love, and Reflection.
change the station, so I